Welcome to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute, brought to you by the Builders Institute of Westchester and the Mid-Hudson Region. Founded in 1946, the BRI is an independent trade association serving all areas of the building and realty industry, including planning, engineering, legal, and government relations. This program is an interactive forum keeping you up to date on the latest news and trends. Now, Constructive Conversations. Here's your host, Associate Executive Director of the BRI, Jeff Hanley.
Good Saturday evening. Welcome to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute. We thank you for joining us this evening. I am Jeff Hanley, Associate Executive Director of the Builders Institute and your program host. We are coming to you live from the studios of AM 970 The Answer in New York City. The Builders Institute, also known as the Building and Realty Institute, is a building, realty, and construction industry membership organization. Our association has more than 1,800 members in 14 counties of New York State. We are truly a statewide business organization. The Institute consistently addresses issues facing the building, realty, and construction sector, as well as the general business community, and that is the focus of our program here on AM 970 The Answer. And once again, thank you for joining us. As I mentioned earlier, we are live, so please feel free to call us at 866-970-9622. That's 866-970-9622 with any questions or comments that you may have. Our program this evening will address what co-ops, condos, and rental apartment buildings and complexes need to know about their respective Americans with Disabilities Act requirements. We'll also touch a bit on what commercial buildings and retail facilities also need to know. Our guest is Stephen Lasser, the principal of the Lasser Law Group, a well-known law firm that has offices here in New York City, as well as in White Plains in Westchester County and in Long Beach on Long Island. Steve, welcome back to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday evening. Steve, please provide us with a brief overview of the Lasser Law Group.
Sure. Lasser Law Group is a real estate and construction law firm. We represent landlords, developers, owners, and approximately 150 co-op condominiums and homeowners associations in New York City, the Hudson Valley, and Long Island. And we provide full service with respect to real estate and construction, so almost all issues that touch on these areas.
As I mentioned, Steve's firm has offices here in New York City as well as in White Plains and in Long Beach. Steve is a valued member of the Builders Institute. And again, Steve, so many thanks for joining us on this Saturday evening. Let's get right to it. There seems to be a little bit of confusion still after all these years about the Americans with Disabilities Act and the relationship those requirements of the ADA have to many buildings and complexes. So let's get right to it. First off, Steve, what is the ADA?
So the ADA is a federal statute, and the purpose of it is to provide equal access to employment accommodations and housing accommodations. Obviously, we're going to focus on the housing accommodations and also just buildings generally this evening. And I think part of the confusion is not only is there the Americans with Disabilities Act, but the state of New York has its own act, the New York State Human Rights Law, and there's also similar laws. And these sort of local laws are based on the ADA, and they're similar, but there's sort of distinctions. There's a lot of overlap, but sometimes, and there's also a local law, the Westchester Human Rights Law. So the point is that the ADA, it's not that straightforward, but to make things more complicated, there's a lot of local laws where there is overlap, and there's sometimes discrepancies between the two. But I think one thing that the listeners and building owners, co-op and condo board members should understand is that is that you have to file the most stringent law in your community. So even if the ADA might not specifically address a certain issue, if the local law addresses it, then you need to comply with the stricter standard. And I'll explain all of that I'll give an example in a few minutes. But the idea is that if someone has a disability, they need equal access. So what that would mean is that to meet the threshold of being a disabled person is pretty low. It's someone with a physical or mental impairment. And usually that's not the issue for a co-op board or a condo board or a rental owner to determine. It's a pretty low threshold. And you know, if someone is in a wheelchair or they claim they have a disability, usually there's not an issue with that. The issue, as discussed in a couple of minutes, is that under the ADA and these other local statutes, you have to provide a reasonable accommodation. And that the idea there is that everyone should be able to enjoy where they live equally. And if you have a disability, you shouldn't be treated like a second-class citizen. You should have the same access. You should be able to enjoy your home the same way. So the standard is that the building owner or the condominium or the cooperative building or the homeowners association has to provide a reasonable accommodation. So that's where things get, let's say, confusing, because it's sort of a subjective term. What's a reasonable accommodation? What's reasonable? It's always sort of open to interpretation. But over the years, there's been litigation in this area, and you can't say with certainty what's reasonable, what's not reasonable. But if you've been in the real estate industry for a while, particularly in the legal side of things, you have a pretty good idea what's reasonable, what's not, and you can sort of provide advice to clients accordingly.
Got it. So if I'm a co-op, if I'm a condo, if I'm an owner or a manager of a rental apartment building or complex, I, generally speaking, have to follow the same set of requirements under ADA, correct?
That's correct. And I think one of the distinctions is, I think co-ops, condos, and rental buildings, they're all the standard is essentially the same. Mm-hmm. One thing that's a little different is in a rental building, the landlord, if someone wants to alter the interior of their apartment in a rental building, then they're allowed to do that, but it's going to be at their own cost. And then they have to restore it to the original condition at the end of their tenancy, except for things that wouldn't affect the next tenant. So, for example, if you had to widen your door frame to accommodate a wheelchair, at the end of your tenancy, you wouldn't have to restore the door frame, because most door frames now would actually accommodate a wheelchair. So something like if you had a roll-in shower installed, then that might have to be restored at the end of the tenancy, but it's at the tenant's expense. And the other thing to sort of keep in mind is that a certain number of, by law now, a certain number of apartments in every complex that is built is set aside for people with disabilities, things of that nature, with accessibility issues. So, you know, there aren't that many circumstances where a rental tenant is going to be in that situation where they have to ask the landlord for permission to make a reasonable accommodation for an alteration in their apartment. And obviously, if you're in a co-op or a condominium, the people own their apartments, so they can, you know, they're free to do that within the guidelines of the cooperative or condominium where they live within the context of the building's alteration policies. But obviously, if they wanted to alter their apartment to put in a special shower or something, then that would have to be allowed. But obviously, that would be at their expense because they own the apartment.
Got it. Steve, we have a caller. Caller, welcome to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute. Thank you for calling in. I thought we had a caller. I guess what we lost the caller. We apologize. Steve will just go right on. I apologize to the caller. Okay. You're listening to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute here on AM 970 The Answer. We are also coming to you on AM 970 TheAnswer.com. I am Jeff Hanley, Associate Executive Director of the Builders Institute and your program host. Our topic this evening is covering the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act, also known as ADA, for co-ops, for condos, for rental apartment buildings and complexes, as well as for commercial and retail properties. Our guest is Steve Lasser. He is the principal of Lasser Law Group, which has offices here in New York City, as well as in White Plains in Westchester County and in Long Beach on Long Island. Steve is a longtime member of the Builders Institute and its affiliate group, the Building and Realty Institute. Steve, I mentioned commercial and retail facilities. Can you touch on the requirements related to ADA for those types of buildings?
Sure. So with commercial buildings, it's basically any kind of commercial building, office, retail,
right,
et cetera. The standard is basically that if any building was constructed prior to 1993, when they undergo alterations, then they must comply with ADA. So basically, the bottom line is, if you have a new building, it's going to be built ADA compliant. But if you have a building constructed after 1993, that, you know, it's not a new construction now, the requirement is that you have to make whatever, anytime you do an alteration, you have to make the space code compliant. A lot of landlords get into situations where they don't realize that they're doing a small alteration, but that it triggers a higher standard, and that they have to make the entire space ADA compliant at that time, which could be quite expensive in some circumstances. But I think it's less of an issue in I would say in the commercial context, but more of an issue in the residential context. I find that in common areas, there are the sort of policy and structural issues that co-op condos and rental landlords need to be aware of. And the most common sort of structural issues that are faced by owners are that if someone requests a reasonable accommodation for, let's say, a parking spot or a ramp or a lift or something of that nature, then the landlord has to make a reasonable accommodation. And then you get that whole discussion, well, what's a reasonable accommodation? And there's some case law on that. And basically, it can get quite expensive. Like, it was court determined that, you know, spending $130,000 on a lift and a ramp was a reasonable accommodation. In other words, I think it was a condominium in that particular case. They were required to install a ramp and lift for $130,000, and that was determined to be reasonable. So what I try to advise, you know, my clients is that if you're in a situation where someone has a wheelchair or a walker and they're requesting, you know, some kind of structural change, you know, the board should look at it hard and long to make sure that if the owner is requesting something that it's, and it's not that expensive, that you consider that, you know, the courts have already said that $130,000 could be reasonable. So, you know, it obviously depends on the circumstances and the layout of the building, but if you're a condo board or a co-op board or a rental owner, you should just keep in mind that if you have an opportunity to, you're required to make a reasonable accommodation in common areas. And it could be a structural alteration. It could be quite expensive. So if there's a less expensive alternative, you should probably consider that. And then the other one is, like I mentioned, is parking spaces. If someone needs a parking space that's closer to the entrance, you should provide that.
Got it.
And then the other issue is sort of policy issues, Jeff. I don't know if you want me to get into this, but the big hot topic is always dogs, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But before we get into that, we do have the caller back. Let's take the caller, then we'll move on to the pet issue, because that is, as you said, a huge, huge issue. Caller, welcome to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute. Thank you for phoning in.
Hello, Jeff. It's Jonathan Barron, the interior designer of apartment building lobbies and hallways.
Jonathan, how are you? Ladies and gentlemen, Jonathan is a longtime member of the Builders Institute. He has appeared on this program as a guest. Thank you for calling in. We appreciate your participation. What's your question? I think we lost Jonathan again. I think we may have lost Jonathan again. I'm sorry, Jonathan Barron. We really apologize. Steve, let's move on to the pet issue, because ESA, emotional support animals, a huge, huge issue. Let's touch on that.
Sure. So, you know, for starters, that it's good to know that, you know, there are certain dogs that receive training. There's guide dogs that help people that are blind. There are hearing dogs, people that have hearing impairments, and the service dogs that do tasks that are trained to open doors, retrieve things. Those dogs can automatically come in, even if your building has a no pet policy. Where you know, things get interesting or creative, or when people claim that they need an emotional support animal, Jeff. And as you know, it's a very common issue. There's a building with a no pet policy. Someone comes in with a dog, or they have a dog that they've been sort of keeping in secret, and then when it's discovered, they say it's an emotional support animal. They don't have any prior treatment. Maybe they do have prior treatment. And then you get into, you know, a debate or a dialogue with this owner as to whether or not it's a legitimate emotional support animal. And, of course, you know, the law is very protective of people with disabilities. And if someone has, first they have to have a disability, then also they have to show that the dog is part of their sort of prescribed therapy from a medical professional, that it sort of helps them to use the apartment. That would be deemed a reasonable accommodation to allow them to have a pet, despite the fact that the building has a no pet policy. And, you know, this can get very controversial. I think a lot of people take advantage of the law, and unfortunately, in the current environment and the current laws on the books, they're very favorable to the people that are seeking the accommodation. And I don't think anyone can argue, you know, would argue that it's bad for people with disabilities to be protected and be able to use their home. The problem is that there's a lot of people out there that sort of take advantage of this and use this as a loophole to bring a dog into a building where the other residents have made a conscious decision to have it as a no dog building. They might have allergies, fear of a dog, whatever the case may be, or noise issues, but they don't want to live in a building with dogs, and now their neighbor might have a dog because they've, you know, requested a reasonable accommodation.
Right. So, Steve, guess what? Jonathan Barrett gave it one more try. Jonathan Barron. I'm sorry if I called you Jonathan Barrett. It's Jonathan Barron, well-known interior designer in the New York metro area. Thank you for your patience, Jonathan. Again, thanks for calling in. What is your question to Steve Lasser?
Steve, how you doing? This is Jonathan here. I've been listening in, and so many of the issues that you bring up, I'm confronted with all the time as a designer of apartment building lobbies and hallways. What I try to bring to my clients is something about more of a moral issue. It may not be that there are handicap issues or complaints or citations against the building. But if I discover where there's an opportunity to put in a handrail, let's say at a ramp in the back of a building, I address that. And I say this is a way to make the building not necessarily brought up to code, but because it just is a way to make the building friendly for the elderly, the handicapped that are coming in and out of the building. So I just wanted to add that to your presentation today about just addressing it from a moral standpoint.
Sure. And I agree with your sentiment 100%. And I think that sort of goes along the lines of what I'm saying is that in some instances, a resident of a building will make a request for something, and it won't be for a new ramp. It'll be something simple like a handrail. And And you're saying you should take a proactive approach in your design, and I agree 100%. And some boards and building owners will be resistant to a simple suggestion like that. And you're right, there is a moral issue there. It could be them one day, but also it can also, I guess I'm digressing again back to the finances of it. It could be a lot more expensive to get it actually up to code. So if there's a simple solution that can be incorporated into design that would make people's lives easier, I think that's a great idea. And I wish people would look at it more from that lens than strictly dollars.
Yes, exactly. And that's just what I wanted to add today, Steve. Just that there's just a to be great with people, just to do something great in your building that's not necessarily because there's a citation. So that's all I wanted to address today, but I'm listening in and you sound great, and these are very serious issues for buildings today to address. Thank you.
Jonathan, thank you so much for phoning in. Enjoy your weekend, and thank you for your support of the Builders Institute. Have a great Saturday night.
Thank you. I'll be listening.
Thank you, my friend. Okay. Steve, what are the best ways for owners and managers to get information on the ADA requirements? Should they speak with their attorney? If I'm a co-op board, should I speak to the co-op attorney? If I'm a condo board, do I speak to the condo attorney? What are the best ways to really become familiarized with the requirements for the multifamily buildings that we're speaking of?
Yeah, so Jeff, there's a lot of information on the internet, but for sure, if you're making, to get your sort of basic, threshold understanding of what the laws are, I think I have some articles on my website, but the main point should be that if you have a question about this, it's a serious issue, and you should definitely speak with your professionals, your property manager, your attorney, and also your architect, especially your architect and design person. Especially if you're contemplating an alteration in your building, you should make sure that the person that you're retaining to help with that alteration or design, let's say, a lobby renovation, you should make sure that design professional is familiar with the ADA requirements, because you don't want to renovate a lobby and then find out down the road that you have to, reconfigure the layout and redo everything because it's not ADA compliant. So it's real important to discuss this, these kind of issues with your attorney or design professional when you're making renovations, or if you're making some kind of policy decision. So the two things that really come up are structural issues, policy issues, and you really need to consult with your professionals when making those decisions.
Attorney, property manager, architect for the building, the three important components you should consult with in terms of the topic we're addressing. Correct, Steve?
That's correct, Jeff.
Yeah, now, the ADA was implemented in 1990, correct? I think it was 1990.
I'm not sure when it was actually implemented, Jeff. I'd have to check that, but that sounds right.
Yeah, I think it was 1990, and I think what you said earlier, Steve, is really true. Since there are different requirements on the local level, on the county level, on the state level, there is confusion between the ADA and the requirements that I just mentioned. So again, if you're a co-op board, if you're a condo board, if you're an owner, if you're a property manager, consult with the attorneys, consult with the professionals on what is required. Unbelievable, we're out of time. Steve Lasser, thank you so much. You did a great job. We appreciate your participation. Also, Jonathan Barron, thank you. Listeners, please join us next Saturday evening for another segment of Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute.
Thanks for listening to Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute. For more information about the issues discussed on today's program, please call the BRI at 914-273-0730. That's 914-273-0730, or go online to buildersinstitute.org. That's buildersinstitute.org. And join us every Saturday evening at 7:30 for Constructive Conversations with the Builders Institute, right here on AM 970, The Answer. This program furnished by the Builders Institute of Westchester and the Mid-Hudson region.